Spotify users, it's Emily here from Studio Drum and Bass's Echoes podcast, here to tell you that this month's interview is with none other than Nominee, workflow extraordinaire, owner of Education and Bass, and general master shifu of everything workflow orientated. And speaking of which, this month's episode is called Life Advice, Productivity and Tips for Developing Producers, because it encapsulates exactly that, and I'm going to drop you straight in. I'm going to very briefly just describe you as like a jack of all trades within the music industry. You know, you've had a multitude of positions throughout your career, including touring DJ, producer, label owner, and teacher, all of which you have self-learnt, which I think is, you know, insane. You've been a part of jungle and rave culture from its origins, and you're constantly evolving, founding Education and Bass. Mm. The first place I wanted to start really was, how do you find the motivation to be constantly working at your craft?
It's a good question, because it's been 25 years since I started DJing and been in this madness, you know, of a journey. But my anxiety is what drives me, in all honesty. I see it as my superpower. I was diagnosed with chronic anxiety a few years ago. It just drives me to want to achieve, and rightly or wrongly, I like to keep myself busy. I like to set myself up with new challenges all the time. And all of that's a result of my anxiety. I don't want to get rid of it. I can live with it now. I've got my coping strategies. And of course, balance is key, because I work. Probably going to go a bit too deep too soon, but I'll just breeze on it. But what I used to do when I used to crash and burn from just working too much was drink. Because I was so intensely working, when I had a drink and I was able to kind of just relax, I didn't want to come out of that to enter back into that insanity of like pressure I'd put myself on for work. I don't drink now, it's been 9 years, but now I know how to kind of respect balance. But I also listen to my body and my mind now. But my anxiety, that's driven me.
Yeah, I guess it's a blessing and a curse, isn't it? Because
yeah, it is.
It's the thing that motivates you, but also you have those moments.
It's tough.
Does it affect your creative process? Do you kind of go into the studio with that at the forefront, or does it take a back seat?
Weirdly, no. I think my mind's always in a hurry, as you know, anxiety. You're always kind of steps ahead. I don't zone out as much as I probably could or should when I'm being creative, because I'm still thinking about other stuff. But again, I've kind of adopted a way that I can still be productive without it affecting me. However, teaching is the only thing where I get tunnel vision and nothing touches me. And DJing. When I'm kind of doing something for other people with the learners, all I'm focusing on is them. And the same as a DJ, I'm focusing on giving the audience a good time. It's those times there where it just doesn't touch me.
Sort of one of those things where you're stepping out of your own mind for a minute and you're not as concerned about your own feelings and you're just trying to like serve others.
Exactly that. Yeah. And that's a big part of what I do on social media as well. It's like my therapy. As much as I share, actually that helps suppress my anxiety as well.
You said that you're posting a lot on social media and your page is full of tips and tricks and motivation. But, you know, it's easier said than done, I think, establishing a continuous routine. What do you reckon would be the best way for, say, a beginner producer to start creating continuously?
First of all, it's got to be true to you. If it's forced and fabricated, you might not maintain the motivation. Like for me, as an educator, sharing tips and tricks was just an extension of what I was doing in the classroom as a university lecturer. You know, I'd be planning hours and hours of lectures a week. Something would jump out in a lesson that day, I would just share it. Mental health and well-being, again, it's stuff that I experience every day, so, and I'm happy to talk about that. And it's just almost stuff that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis anyway, and so to maintain that's quite easy.
So it kind of just comes naturally, is what you're saying?
Yeah, and you have to form a habit as well, right? Consistency and forming a habit. And now, if I don't do a tip, it's like leaving the house without brushing my teeth on a day.
Yeah.
Something don't feel right. So if you form those new habits, and that takes time, so consistency is key, full stop.
Do you have kind of a way of settling that consistency in? Because, you know, I'm thinking about me and a lot of other producers that I've spoken to. In order to kind of learn how to produce, you have to spend a lot of hours studying. But it can be hard, especially if you have distractions or work. Like, how do you get into that continuous routine? Like, how do you establish that consistency?
You've got to learn to love the process. because even without anxiety, you might be sitting there making a tune, thinking about how it's going to blow the club up and what DJs are going to play it and what record label's going to sign
it. End game.
You're thinking about the end game. You're not present and in the moment. I found my love for being in the moment again in the studio recently, and in the last 2 years, I've made more music than I ever have. I've got a Nomine album coming and an Outrage album, like drum and bass, and then and loads of other stuff. But I just had to find my love for that moment again and not worry about how it's going to sound on tour. The whole Zen philosophy, being present, and without mental health and anxiety, a lot of us, our minds are in other places. We're rarely present. Just loving what you're doing, getting into it, learning new things and getting excited about practicing those new things in the studio. Your excitement needs to come from the fact that you're going to be sitting down in the studio creating. And if you can find that and tune into that, it makes it easier because it's hard.
Yeah. Does that mean switching off your phone, limiting kind of extraneous variables, or do you reckon good breaks might positively impact the creative process?
The only studio time I get now is 5 a.m.
Gosh, that's an awful time. That'd be awful for me. I'd just be shattered.
A lot of people you come across, I haven't found the time to do this or that. I'm a believer in you make time. You don't find time. Time's not something you find. We all have the same amount of time.
So sleep is out of the question.
Well, no, it's being sensible, isn't it? Like if I get up at 5, I'll lay down about 10, might fall asleep about 11. I'm still getting my 5-6 hours, but then I'll listen to my body again. It's like, I'm not going to do that forever. If I start to kind of get a bit cloudy, I'll stop and refresh and kind of defrag. Limiting the time you have as well. I think what a lot of people fall victim of is give up my job full time, then all of a sudden you're full time, but actually, you know, you might surface on a Tuesday, Wednesday, get in, it's the weekend.
That's me
again,
right now.
And you've got, yeah, and then you've got a gig. You know, my most productive times, even when I'm touring the world, is when I've got a 9-to-5 situation and I'm respecting the time I have and I'm not procrastinating because I'm like, I've got 2 hours, I need to get busy. So sometimes you can give yourself too much time. Obviously there's a thing like the state of flow. It takes a certain amount of time for you to get into it. There's, you know, there's science around the state of flow and stuff. But actually you can give yourself too much time and procrastination and just laziness and stuff can consume you.
So, and then the habit is broken and you have to kind of start from square one.
So like limiting that time initially, but making the most of it. There's a technique called the Pomodoro technique where you split things off into kind of smaller chunks of time and you just, like you say, get rid of the distractions and execute that task and give yourself a little reward after, whether it's like a little TV break, social media check, email check, but make sure that time you've allocated is only on that and get rid of all of the distractions.
Within those kind of hours of creativity, do you ever experience writer's block?
I don't believe in it anymore, and I'll tell you why. When I returned back to education. I didn't get a GCSE. I returned back to education 15 years off being a touring DJ and a producer, and I got accepted onto a master's program, which nearly killed me. I had a nervous breakdown. I hadn't done any writing since writing about the Big Friendly Giant when I was 15. And then I'm doing a master's, right, because of my industry experience and my profile. Uni opened my mind to, like, other genres, because I was a drum and bass snob. You couldn't tell me about no other music for many years. I would not entertain it. It opened my mind to research and just listening to other things like the avant-garde, experimental music. So all of a sudden I find myself researching 25 genres as a part of my project, and I'm finding out that all of these genres and sounds and these artists that I've never heard of are just a world of inspiration. And the minute I open my mind to this other stimuli, I don't get writers. In fact, my mind is exploding because I've got too many ideas, because I listen to anything but the genre that I'm actually creating in. I'll always tune in to see what's going on to get a general vibe. Then I'll go and listen to all these this other wonderful world of music, and I borrow from here, there, and everywhere. There's no such thing as an original idea. Everything's a remix. And there's a TED talk by Kirby Ferguson that talks about this. Our brains respond to stimuli, and everything we do creatively comes from a feeling, an emotion, an experience, things that we collect over the years that we don't actually even know. So if you're struggling, go and get inspired by listening or walking or just reflecting, meditating. And, you know, it's difficult to get writer's block, I feel.
I actually listened to the Heritage Sound podcast on your Education and Bass YouTube channel.
Yeah, wicked.
And you were talking about how researching different cultures and different genres of music. I think as the nominee, Alias, you said you did an album that comprised of multiple genres. Do you reckon that's kind of a good way to get around if you're feeling
creatively inhibited? Yeah, go listen to some stuff outside your genre. That's a nice chord progression. That's a lovely kind of bridge. That's a lovely arrangement. What they did with that feedback and that noise in that transition was amazing.
Because D&B in general is influenced by so many different like genres. You know, you've got jazz, you've got electronica, but I do feel like sometimes D&B producers, especially when they're starting out, they tend to be quite purist. Like they'll listen to a certain artist and they'll be like, hard kick, hard snare. But there's, I don't know, maybe a lack of influence from everywhere else.
It's what jungle was. Jungle was a melting pot of, like you say, jazz, funk, soul, reggae. You know, most music of black origin formed the foundation of jungle. And then beyond that, it would borrow from classical, you name it, drum and bass, and it still is, you know, the melting. And I do feel it's been lost a bit from what you're saying. If, you know, exactly that artists are only looking to artists now, whereas before we were sampling our parents' record collections. And that's different now, you know?
It's the way that people are consuming music now, isn't it? It's like changed so much. So I guess like the creative process has also changed.
Another big, huge contributing factor towards writer's block is sitting there, I'm going to write a banger. You put yourself under that pressure. Yeah, this is going to be the one. Nah. Just write 10 tracks, create. Don't put yourself under that pressure. Obviously, it's good to have goals and ambition and kind of levels, but just write 10 tracks. One of those 10 tracks might be the banger. Don't sit there and, right, I need to make
a
banger.
So, like, cherry pick the best ideas and then bring them
together.
Yeah,
just don't put yourself under that pressure.
You actually have a feedback service, don't you, on Education and Bass, where you get people's works in progress or finished tracks. Is there any kind of common mistakes you see within a mix where you're like, oh, this could be so easily changed?
The loudness war has created like a lot of problems. People go for that loud kind of mix and DIY master.
Like uber limited or?
Yeah, just hyper compressed, muddy, but not knowing the tricks to get something loud. And we live in a world, unfortunately, where everything's fast-tracked, education's fast-tracked. There's a hack for this and a hack for that. You've got companies that provide loops and samples, which is great, 100%, there's nothing wrong with that. But actually, it means that people are not learning the craft as much, and they're not learning about necessary mixing and parallel processing and the stuff that help you get the louder mixes that don't sound kind of pulverized and destroyed. It's almost like, you know, you're creating a track from loops and sounds, but missing out some of the stuff that you need to compete at an industry kind of level. There's nothing wrong with loudness if you know how to get it loud. But a big common mistake is just people trying to get that loudness without taking the time to learn the tricks and tips to actually get it done right.
Yeah, I see that with Loop Cloud. You just have high quality sound at your disposal so quickly. You know, all it takes really is a little bit of searching. The thing I find the hardest is finding plugins that will allow me to quite easily get the hang of these kind of techniques. Or are there any sort of plugins that you'd recommend?
I think a lot of the stock plugins in things like Logic and Ableton are great. First of all, you've got to know what it is you're looking for. Does it sound a bit dull, or is it not fat enough? Is it not punchy enough? Okay, what plugins do I have in this current platform that are going to help me do that? If you can identify what it is you're not getting from it, and you know the types of tools that will help you get there, then you can say, okay, well, the EQ in Logic isn't quite giving me that. Let me go to another EQ. But first of all, a lot of people just do stuff because they see in a tutorial, but they'll try and apply it on every single track, but they haven't identified the need to apply it first. Like, okay, this track doesn't sound fat enough. The drums are a bit dull and not punchy. What do I need to do that? Okay, maybe some parallel processes. So it's knowing, first of all, what the problem is, what you're not getting from that track, and then knowing the techniques first. And if you're not getting what you want out from the stock plugins, then you look outside of that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned actually how people were applying the same effect to every track. And I guess that you could fall into the trap of overload in that case as well, and like phase issues.
Phase is a big problem. Everyone likes a big wide mix, and you know, the more plugins you add can knock things out of phase. And so being aware of phase in general is just very good practice. It's just analysing after you've done something to see if things have gone out of phase, and flipping the phase to see if it's better when you've done that. But also reverb, overuse of reverb is huge, because we're in a space now, this room has reverb. I used to love putting loads of reverb on my track because I wanted a certain vibe, but I'd go and play at venues, big rooms. What is a big room? It's a big reverb space.
And massive speakers as well.
So. Natural reverb on top of your reverb, and my mixes were sounding really thin and I couldn't work it out. Then I think it was Dom and Roland that said to me, any reverb you apply in the studio and you're like, yeah, this is cool, just then dial it back maybe 20%, because you're in a small room, cool, in that room it sounds okay, but the bigger the space, the more things can sound washed out and thin. So if you're not getting that chunky, fat mix, first place to look at is, are you over processing the stuff with even compression? Dial it all back and you'll feel things come closer to you in the mix again, and then you can start to control the effects and how much you apply.
I think also what I gathered from that is that mixing within different sound systems and within different kind of areas might benefit the mix as well.
Yeah, always. If the luxury of like just listening, the car test is always good. Everyone goes on about the car test, but I'll Bluetooth my AirPods to the studio computer and I'll mix on my AirPods for a bit, you know, and then I'll stick a loop when I'm working out, listen to some cheaper headphones. There's many different environments that you can listen on. A good mix is one that sounds as similar as possible across all those different kind of platforms and devices, so headphones, speakers. If you've got a sub bass and you can't hear it, of course you're not going to hear it on a laptop. Maybe a bit of saturation on a parallel to give it that crunch where you can hear it on some speakers. So it's those little things that will help you, because people listen on so many different devices now.
Yeah.
Some people listen with one AirPod. If you've got something panned hard right and they've got the left AirPod in,
I've had that actually before, and I'm listening to a track, I'm like, where are the vocals? I just put my headphone in my arm.
Oh, right, yeah, because they're hard panned.
Oh,
yeah.
I wanted to hark back to something that you said earlier about mainstream education and how it wasn't for you, you didn't resonate with it. What did you find that just wasn't your kind of shtick?
Well, I didn't know I had anxiety then. All I knew is that I always had butterflies in my stomach, like when I was a kid on Christmas Eve. I had those sorts of butterflies 24/7, and apparently that's anxiety attacks. I didn't know that. I learned to live with constant butterflies.
You thought it was the norm.
Sometimes the butterflies were here, sometimes they were just fluttering in the background, and then it'd go bang, 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 and that was panic attacks, but not the sort of panic attacks where you might collapse due to kind of social anxiety or whatever. It was just that in my stomach. So I couldn't focus. I couldn't read. Like, I could read, but I couldn't read. Like, I'd have to read a page about 30 times because I'd just be like, halfway through the page, my mind is like here. I didn't do my homework. Parents, have you got homework? Yep. Is it done? Yep. Cool. Didn't check. You know, I just blagged it. Had to face the consequences at school. Got entered for all my GCSEs. Didn't get one. But I was actually made to believe that I was stupid at school because of my anxiety. We weren't putting tags on people back then with kind of learning difficulties or mental health. So there was no real support, other than maybe people with like dyslexia. There was no real support for those that had anxiety or other forms of mental health. Maybe if there was, it would have been a bit different, but I just felt I was stupid and I was made to believe that I wasn't cut out for school. And it was only later on in life that I realized, hang on, I can learn things, but I do it in a different way. I'm visual. You show me something, it's locked, and I will unravel it in my head and work out why that is what it is. I'll work the theory out. In school, it was chalkboard and all these equations and all this other stuff in a way that was just not kinesthetic. It was one way of teaching, but I learned a different way.
So for people with different learning processes, it would have been harder to kind of resonate with that. Is that part of the reason why you founded Education and Bass, to kind of help people in a similar situation?
Big time, because I went back to do a master's and I smashed it to my own disbelief, because I applied myself and I was 2% away from getting a scholarship to a PhD, and I was absolutely dumbfounded. How has that even happened? Like, I'm not academic. And then I did a teaching degree. So then I was a lecturer at a university for 7 years, and I was like, wow, I can do this. And I want to show other people that they can too. Mental health, non-academic, yes, you can, but you do it this way, not that way. Or if you weren't ready for that way later on in life like me, yes, you can. You just got to work out how you learn, and we can all learn.
Have you had feedback from from people that have said similar scenarios. You, they've been to kind of mainstream school and they haven't found it works for them, and they've come to Education and Base and they've seen like there's a different way around it.
I think so. Some of the feedback we've had is that we've had people that have come out of degrees and felt they've learned more with us in 3 months than they have on a 2-year degree, which is mind-blowing, you know. They're like, but I think the way that I teach and the way that we now teach as EMB, it's almost how I learn, and I think that's different maybe to how it's done in the system. And I think people will resonate because I teach in the way that I learn, which is based on me having anxiety and learning different ways, and the way that's how I deliver. I think we attract similar people.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, I like this style, I can get with this.
And you establish a community as well, which I assume helps because everybody's in a similar position or in the same boat, so you can kind of feed off each other.
Yeah.
And social media probably helps with that a lot. I've seen that you post every day, sometimes twice a day on, you know, you've got your nominee page, you've got Education and Base. Do you think that having a social media presence just for an artist in general is important?
I hate to say it, but it is.
Yeah.
The nominee project was anonymous for 2 years and I got away with it. Nobody knew who nominee was because I nearly gave up music. I thought, right, I'm either going to give up music or I'm going to start an alias where there's no expectations from anybody. I'm not associated with a label, a sound, a style. Thankfully, it worked out. I got signed to Temper and I did 5 EPs and an album with Temper. But for 2 years, no one knew who nominee was. And there was a big forum at the time called the Dubstep Forum. And there was this, who is nominee? Is it Burial? Is it 40? Who is nominee? And there was this mystique around it. But then I was like, hang on. It's great that there's this mystique. I'm a DJ first and foremost. I'm not getting any gigs. No one knows who I am.
Should have just done a Deadmau5 thing.
But check it, I nearly did. So I got Youngster booked me to play at one of his nights, Contact, at Brixton Mass. And I bought a ninja mask, right? Because the whole music was quite ethnic and Japanese and whatnot. So I bought this ninja mask and I bottled it. The next day, I always wonder what would happen if I did it. The next day on that forum, oh, it's outrage.
So it wasn't kind of a purposeful thing. I mean, you chose not to wear the ninja mask, but it wasn't something you decided like, today I'm going to come out as a nominee.
No, I just wanted to DJ. I'm a DJ and I weren't getting gigs. This mystique. I always wonder if I'd have maintained that mystique because there was a lot of hype around it. And, you know, few people have got away with it. You know, like Burial, like Subtract.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few people that have got away with it. And I always wonder what it'd be like if I maintained the ninja.
You could always do something else. Like,
yeah, well, I've got ideas. Yeah,
have
I've
you?
Got ideas to just reinvent as a little secret alias again. But yeah, I do believe you kind of have to. If you can find your thing with it, yeah, I think it's important.
I want to ask, what is next for you as a musician, as a creative?
As I say, I've just done an album as nominee in collaboration with someone else that I don't know if I can say it just yet. But it's another
we love premieres here on
yeah it's another big okay, I'll tell you what then, I'll give you
a hint. Oh yeah. No, you don't have to.
No, I'll tell you what. No, Youngster, there's a nominee and Youngster album coming out.
That's
in the
brilliant.
Spring, which is big. No one will be expecting it, although but it's fine because we want to put a tour together, so we have to let people know sooner or later. We've both got the same agent, so yeah, go check out Veronica at Stimulus to book us. So that's coming out in the spring. We've got test presses and that's exciting because Youngster, you know, he's Dubstep. Youngster is up there with the godfathers of dubstep, and he was A&R for Temper. His sister, Sarah Lockhart, she was responsible for Forward and a lot of stuff with Rinse. It's just to be a part of that and to do a project with Yonks is quite a special thing. So that's cool. And I've got an Outrage album that I'm doing for Function Records, which is Digital's label. So that I'm about 75% through with that. So that'll be next year at some point. I've got some music coming out on Ram Records next month. As Outrage, which is obviously a really cool thing because, yeah, Ram was not a label I ever thought I'd have music on because of my sound, but actually they've took a straight up Outrage track, which is great. My stuff's more suited to kind of the stuff that I've done with metalheads and stuff like that. But yeah, so that's happening. And like I say, I think next year, output-wise, will just be the busiest in my whole 20 plus years, I think.
you've got an album, you've got an EP, both different genres. So is it stuff that you've been working on?
We had both albums.
Oh, sorry, two albums.
Yeah, two albums, Outrage album and a Nominee album.
Ridiculous, yeah. Like, I can't even...
Yeah.
An EP is just hard for me to fathom, so yeah. Two albums in a year is going to be, yeah, intense. Yeah.
So that'd be cool. I can get back out there and do some gigs, which would be nice.
Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to plug?
Nah, just...
Is there anything you want to say?
For everybody coming through, just understand that, you know, I'm a big believer that most things are possible, you know, and don't be scared of failing is my biggest thing. You know, a lot of things we won't try and do through fear of failure, but actually, so what if you fall down and you don't achieve it? People leave this world with many regrets of like not doing the things they wanted to do in life. So, you know, just do it. And if it's an education thing, yes, you can learn, you know, just got to find your way of doing it.
Motivational speech to end the interview. Perfect. Yeah, thank you so much.
Wicked, thank you.
I think if I ever fall off track or my trajectory becomes clouded, I'm probably gonna sign back onto this episode and just revisit and listen to a little bit of inspiration from Nominee there. Loads of stuff from Studio Drum and Bass this month, including an Adrenaline guest mix from John Doe. Check that out on SoundCloud. We've got an event, Studio Drum and Bass invites Current Value and Gyra Field, and an article on Global Extraction Volume 1, How Vale is Crushing the Boundaries of Drum and Bass. All of that will be posted on our socials if you want to keep in touch. Send us a message. We'd love to hear from you on subjects that you'd like to hear next or what you think of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Massively insightful. Thank you so much to Nominee for getting involved. So much more studio content this month, including an Adrenaline guest mix with John Doe, spelt J-O-N-T-H-O. We've got an event running with Current Value and Gyra Field. Also, a new series, Global Extraction Volume 1, How Vale is Crushing the Boundaries of Drum and Bass. If you want to hear the 10 premieres we have for this month, I won't reveal anything, but they're on our SoundCloud page at Studio Drum and Bass. Thank you so much for listening. See you next month.